Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. Gacy, Bundy, Dahmer, The Night Stalker, BTK. Every week, another fascinating author talking about the most shocking and infamous killers in true crime history. True Murder, with your host, journalist and author, Dan Zupansky.
Good evening, this is your host, Dan Zupansky, for the program True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. In 1992, Lois Duncan, acclaimed author of fictional suspense novels, wrote a horror story she could never have imagined writing, a true account of the murder of her own daughter, Caitlin Arquette. Kate, 18, was shot to death as she drove home from a friend's house on a Sunday evening in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Police closed the unsolved case as a random shooting, refusing to accept information that indicated otherwise, although it had all the earmarks of a professional hit. That first book, Who Killed My Daughter, was Duncan's desperate attempt to motivate informants and prevent the facts of Kate's story from becoming buried. It turned out to accomplish much more than that. Duncan's new book, One to the Wolves, On the Trail of a Killer, is even more horrifying than its predecessor as new information poured in, the family ran for their lives, and their original suspicions turned out to be the tip of an iceberg, so immense that Kate herself could not have known how dangerous the information was that she had been sitting on in order to protect a now estranged boyfriend. The book that we're featuring this evening is One to the Wolves, On the Trail of a Killer, with my special guest, journalist and author, Lois Duncan. Welcome to the program, and thank you for agreeing to this interview, Lois Duncan.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for having me on, and thank you for caring about us and about Kate.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is an incredible book and, of course, an incredible case. And if there is ever a case that's more personal, I can't imagine it. So let's get to this incredible story with the introduction of yourself, because this is actually, as you point out, and it's very obvious, this is quite ironic. Tell us what your chosen career has been, and you've been successful in this profession. Tell us what you are, what kind of author you are, and the type of books that you have written.
I always knew I was going to be a writer. I was starting to send stories to magazines when I was 10 years old and began to sell them when I was 13. And I sold my first book. I wrote my first book at age 20. That was called Debutante Heel, which will put me back, and you can see what era I came from. That was published in 1957, and it's just recently been republished. And so I started with these gentle teenage stories. And then at some point, I started writing suspense novels for teenagers. And that turned out to be the niche that I was placed into and became popular in, with books like I Know What You Did Last Summer and Killing Mr. Griffin. By this time, I've written over 50 books, so I've had a very long career, but never, ever did I think that I would be writing a book about the murder of my own child.
Yes. Now, tell us about your life with Caitlin, Arquette. I guess this is your pen name that you're using as Lois Duncan as a writer. But tell us about life growing up, about your husband and Caitlin and any siblings. Tell us about what her life was really like, and then you can explain what really characterized her particular personality and what was her ambitions and goals and dreams in life. Tell us a little bit about Caitlin Arquette, please.
Well, I grew up in a very gentle home with parents who never, ever thought about evil entering into our lives. And it was just my brother and me and my parents, and we were a very happy family, what you'd call the absolute normal family. And I married Don Arquette, and I had a previous marriage with three children and was divorced, and Don adopted my three children. And then he and I went on to have two more children of our own, Donnie Arquette, Don Jr., and Kate, who was our baby. And so we had five children. We're raising five children. We were living in Albuquerque, New Mexico. All our children were interesting in their own ways. And Kate, being the baby of the family, was doted on, of course, by all of us. And she was very bright, and she was she wanted to become a doctor so she could help people, save lives. She was a humanitarian. Early on, she became an organ donor as soon as she could get her driver's license. And she was also very strong-willed and rebellious and funny and delightful and beautiful. And that is a dangerous combination of things to have. And that was our youngest child. And Kate is the one who was chased down in her car and shot to death. And all of those traits that she had probably contributed to the murder, because it made her someone who went out and did things that we didn't know about. And it also contributed to what she donated from her life, because being an organ donor, she never got to become the doctor she had always wanted to be, but five of her organs were transplanted, and so five lives were saved because Kate died.
Mm-hmm. Well, that she cared enough to be an organ donator, because people don't always do that.
When they're that young. She was saying she wanted to be an organ donor when she was 12. And as soon as she got her driver's license, that's what she put on it. So when she died, we knew that we had to keep her. She was pronounced brain dead. We knew we had to keep her body going long enough to get her organs transplanted, because that's what she wanted to have happen.
Now, I know this is, you know, maybe even a painful question, but I think it's important as we talk about this case. Now, you say that there are things that, oh, of course, especially teenage children are not going to, as close as any parent can be with their child. I mean, there's going to be some secrets between them, some things that are held back and things that obviously they're not going to necessarily share. But overall, as you write in the book, it's not like this is, Caitlin was a troubled youth or anything, but was there, you know, if we talk about, you know, the period of time when she has this boyfriend, Dung, tell us about this relationship, how long it had occurred, and the meeting of you with the boyfriend or the contact or any information you have about that. What was your initial impression hearing about or meeting? Tell us about the relationship with this Vietnamese person, Dung, and your reaction. Tell us.
Well, I'll start with your first question about what Kate was like. Kate withheld things like any teenager would. But Kate never had been in trouble of any kind. She
right.
was the gold star kid. She was honor society. She didn't smoke. She didn't drink. She didn't do drugs. She'd never been in trouble with the law. She had a curfew. She kept it. So it's not like we had anything to make us think this could happen. But
right.
Kate also was a person that was a humanitarian, and she was always bringing home stray animals that were hurt and nursing them back to health, and stray people who had problems, and Kate wanted to help them deal with their problems. And in this case, this was a young Vietnamese man. He was one of the boat kids. He came over. He was struggling with the language. He was homesick for his family back in Vietnam. He and Kate met at a coffee house. She more or less adopted him, and I think it started like that. She brought him home all the time, and he called me Mom and would stand over me in the kitchen as I cooked and be so excited about being in a real home. And so it was like she was, first it was like she was taking care of him, and then it went on and it turned into a romantic relationship. And we really didn't know much about him because he was around all the time because she had him there taking care of him. But his English was not good, so it's hard to have a conversation with him.
Right.
And Kate would say nothing about him that wasn't good. And we had no idea that anything was wrong. And when Kate graduated, she already had a job. She was self-supporting. She graduated. She immediately got her own apartment. She wanted to be independent. And she could pay for it out of what she was earning with her work. And she took him in to live with her there. And I think that once that happened, she learned about things that she didn't know before that. Because before that, she had a curfew. He would be at our house. He'd go home. She, as far as we knew, would go to bed. Maybe she slipped out. I don't know. But once she had her own place and he moved in, and then all his friends came swarming in, and she realized that his friends were part of a criminal group. I think she, in the last couple of months of her life, learned about a lot of things she was not supposed to know. And then she broke up with him, and the night she broke up with him, she was chased down in her car and shot to death. So
yeah.
I'm not thinking that he did it, But I'm thinking that she knew too much, and she was now angry and was in a position to expose it, and she was taken out.
Yeah,
now
I can see where
speculation, Dan.
Mm-hmm. No, but there's inferences, and so there's a difference, and so we'll get to that as well, because don't downplay that sort of thing, because you provide a lot of information, and that's all an investigation ever is, whether it's police or private investigation or private citizens and doing an investigation. So there's always validity, certainly, and that's there's logic involved there too. So let us go back to, unfortunately, tell us what happened in terms of, again, it's important for people to understand this case because of the implausibility of the, again, we talk about a random shooting and it looks like an assassination, and you just mentioned that there was good reason for someone to have her assassinated. So tell us just about if whatever you can handle in terms of, again, it's very interesting that the car travels 720 feet and then is put in park. So tell us about what actually happened that night. Take us back to the fateful event prior to that, and then lead us up to what at first was known about and what you knew initially about what had happened.
The night of the murder, Kate left her apartment, came over to our house. She arrived at 6 p.m. I know exactly when she arrived because 60 Minutes had just started. So she walked in the door just as the show started. So I know that absolutely. And she told us that she had a breakup with her boyfriend. You said Dung. Actually, it's pronounced Yoon as far as the Vietnamese pronunciation goes. And that it was over something very serious, that she had told him he had to move out of her apartment. She didn't want him or his friends around anymore. And she said she was going to the home of a new girlfriend for dinner, and that she was going to then come back and spend the night at our house. She was not going to go back into the apartment until he was gone. And so she went to the home of the girlfriend. And when she left the home, she was chased down in her car and shot to death, driving in the direction of our house.
Now, this is important, too.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Welcome to a trip you'll never forget in Denver, where summer sunshine sparks mountain adventure. Denver, always welcome. Plan your trip at visitdenver.com/summer.
If you're on the lookout for true crime stories told from a fresh perspective with nuance, depth, and detail, I have a new show for you. Check out Murder, True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. From the shocking Chandra Levy case and infamous Tylenol murders to the tragic deaths of the Clutter family, each episode focuses on a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Listen in every Tuesday as the show dives into the darkest corners of true crime, unraveling chilling narratives, examining compelling clues, and most importantly, seeking the truth. What sets Murder True Crime Stories apart is the focus on humanizing the victims and the effect their deaths had on their families, friends, and community. We'll always leave with the knowledge of why their stories need to be heard. There's a story behind every murder, but is there an ending? New episodes of Murder True Crime Stories release every Tuesday. Just search for Murder True Crime Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
Where was she shot?
She was shot twice in the head.
Yeah.
You mean where in the town was she shot?
No, that's what I wanted to establish, that because again, a random shooting with two shots in the skull.
There were three shots that we know of that were fired. Two went through the glass driver's side window, which was up, and entered her head, and another bullet entered the door frame behind her head.
Right.
And this is interesting. No casings were ever found. No bullets were ever found. The bullet that went into the...
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Door frame of the car went through. It was never found, according to police reports. We think it probably was found, but police reports say it wasn't. The bullets that went into her head were never found. They apparently, according to the medical investigator, must have been of such small caliber that they shattered when they entered her head, and that the fragments must have been swept away in their bloodstream. However, the hole in the side of the car on the door frame is quite large. If you go to our website, you can see a picture of it. Or if you read "When Do the Wolves," we've got a good sized picture of it there, showing the size of that hole. And that hole is certainly not a .22. That is a large size bullet, which would suggest to us that two guns were used. And if that's the case, that was not random.
Certainly, certainly. Now, what do the police release to the public, and what do the police say to you? And how soon? How much time elapses before authorities contact you? How do they contact you? Tell us about that.
we were called from the hospital, and my husband Don and I were asleep, and we were called just before midnight, and it was a nurse from the hospital or some representative there said, "Your daughter is here, and she's been injured." And I immediately said, "Well, what's wrong?" They said, "Well, we cannot talk to you on the phone. You have to come down." And so, of course, we jumped into our clothes and drove straight to the hospital. And all we could think of was it must have been a car wreck. She's going to her girlfriend's house. She never came back here to go to sleep like she said she would. She's been in a car wreck. And I got out. My husband took the car around to park it. And I got out and ran in the emergency room door. And a nurse came out and put her arms around me. And right then I thought, oh, God, this is worse than I ever imagined. And I said, "It's a car wreck, isn't it?" And she said, "Your daughter's been shot in the head." And then she said, "You've got to prepare yourself for the fact that you may lose her." Wow. And she was in a coma, and her brains were shattered. And I later asked the doctor, "What should we pray for? What would you pray for if this was your child?" He said, "I don't know what to tell you." He said, "If she lives, she'll never be Kate." And he implied she'll be a vegetable.
Yeah.
And she continued to live for 20 hours on life support. And then she went brain dead. And I had to be the one to say, "Take her off life support." And I figured I had to be the one because I was the one who brought her into the world, so I should be the one that takes her out. And the young man who was waiting for her heart and lungs was already prepped on the next floor waiting to get them. And I knew she wanted to donate them, and I knew she no longer had a brain. So I said, "Unplug her."
Yeah.
That was the worst thing I've ever had to do in my life.
Well, of course, of course. Yeah, I can only imagine. Now, to top this off, of course, there's the nagging questions of who and why. And so what are the police's official explanation via their release and their explanation to you?
In the beginning, there was a good young homicide detective, Steve Gallegos. I will name names here because they're all matter of record. And he was in charge of her case. And he was doing things right. He was going around. He went straight to the girlfriend's house. Then he went straight to the apartment where Kate's boyfriend was. And woke him up to break the news to him. Well, we later discovered that 2 hours before that, the boyfriend had already been calling people, telling them that Kate had been shot. But Steve Gallegos didn't know that. And Detective Gallegos was doing everything that he could during those first days and trying hard. And then it was almost like something came down and blocked him, like somebody said, "Stop it. You're not to go on this track. This was a random drive-by shooting, and you are not to look at it anymore." And he was just a young detective, and he obeyed his superiors. And this is, I am, again, speculating why he did this, but I saw him doing all the right things, and then I saw it blocked. And then suddenly the police said, random drive-by shooting, and we will not accept any information that indicates otherwise. And that was...
Now, let's just get back to this, because I think this is very important. You said that, of course, you write in the book that a few hours later, 3 hours later, the police contact Nung, Kate's boyfriend, and to tell him about the death of his girlfriend and to see his reaction, as they know that they're always looking at people closest to the victim in this particular case. The boyfriend is a likely suspect that they have to rule out or you know, consider an interesting suspect. How did you find out that he had contacted his friends? How certain are you with this in terms of he contacted his friends saying that Kate had been shot and then the police report? Tell us about how certain you are about that information.
Because Kate, much after the fact, Kate's hairdresser contacted us. And because we have a website up and we had email way for tipsters to get in touch with us, and she contacted us and told us that, and she wasn't just Kate's hairdresser, she was a personal friend too. Kate babysat
right.
with her children, and she used Kate as a hair model, and she said that Yoon had phoned her babbling hysterically, "Kate's dead. They shot Kate. Kate's dead." And she knew exactly what time he called because the late news had just gone off, and she and her husband were getting ready for bed. And so her husband could support her statement. And this was hours before the police went to the apartment and woke up Yoon. And so there's no reason to disbelieve this young woman who would
right.
contact us. And she also told us she had called the police within weeks of the shooting and told them this. And they said that they would not take her information because it was a random shooting and it suggested something else.
Wow. Yeah.
She was
incredible.
Very frustrated. She has actually allowed us to take a video of her making this statement about the shooting. She was very angry that she was shrugged off with important information. And we owe her a lot for her honesty and her courage to come to us and tell us that.
Now, you just mentioned it, but maybe we should talk about how strong this is, because as I did in the introduction, you wrote a book earlier and it was published in 1994, looking for information about the murder itself and seeking people to come and help out and contact you. You also had a website and chat sites and all kinds of people behind this. So tell us a little bit more about that. And then another interesting thing is the private eye, the lady that contacts you at some point too. So maybe we're jumping ahead there. But again, tell us a little bit more about how dedicated and serious you people were about getting information about your daughter's murder and certainly being very active. Tell us about all the things that you did do.
Well, the first indication we had that something was really wrong was when I was paying Kate's final bills. And I was paying her phone bill, and I saw two phone calls to California that were made while Kate was dying. In fact, they were made right after she was pronounced dead. and they were made from her apartment. And nobody was supposed to be in that apartment. The boyfriend was at the hospital with us. And who were those people in California that were being phoned at that point? And that's when I went to the police and said, something's wrong. You need to check out these phone numbers. And they said, well, we can't check them out because they're unlisted. And I said, well, surely the police have a way to get those. And they said, oh, no, that would be illegal. Well, I taught writing at the University of New Mexico, taught magazine writing for the journalism department. And a lot of my students had gone on to become reporters. So I called one of them who was an investigative reporter, Mike Gallagher is his name, at the Albuquerque Journal. And I said, do you know how to find out whose number this is? And he said, yeah, I can find it out. And he found out and he called me. And we discovered that this was a criminal group of Vietnamese people in California that were involved in a car wreck insurance fraud scam, and that Kate's boyfriend and his friends were involved in that, that Kate had gone out and witnessed one of the wrecks. Right then we started thinking, now wait, something is very, very wrong here if the police don't even want to look at this. And here are my kid from my class was able to go find out whose number it was. Why couldn't the police do it? And that's when we started turning on to the fact that something was very wrong. And we started getting more and more information. Everything we tried to give to the police, they said, no, we don't want it because it's a random shooting. And finally, they dropped off the case, said, we're done with it. We're never going to do any further investigation. And only then did I write a book, because I didn't want to get in the way of a police investigation. But when they said that they were not going to do anymore, I wrote Who Killed My Daughter. And that book went wild. It sold extremely well. It's still in print, and you can get it on Amazon or anywhere else. It's in paperback, and it's also an ebook. And Who Killed My Daughter opened the door because it threw me into all these talk shows all over the country, like Larry King and Good Morning America and Unsolved Mysteries and Sally Jesse Raphael. And Kate's story suddenly was big news.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Right.
And the police had never expected that. This is a little teenager in Albuquerque being shot to death. Why would anyone ever notice it? Well, suddenly everybody in the United States was noticing the Caitlin Arquette murder. And that police, of course, hated us. Hated me. And we started getting death threats to the rest of our family. So we left Albuquerque, and I'm glad we did, because I think those death threats were serious. And that sparked a lot of people, tipsters, people who had information about the case, to start contacting us. And it also brought in outside investigators who were interested in the case, wanted to help us, forensic experts, crime scene analysts, and in particular, the private investigator, Pat Caristo, that you referred to,
right,
who had information about a man who was standing next to Kate's car when the first officers arrived. That man, Paul Apodaca, had a long record of violent assaults upon women, and he was allowed to leave the scene without ever being questioned as either a witness or a suspect. And if you find a man with that background standing next to a car where there's a young woman who's been shot in the head, you'd think that you would at least get some information from him.
Right.
So she became our Mother Teresa figure. And these people were all helping us pro bono. And they got more and more involved. And we've come to call them Kate's Army, because it's like this whole army from outside of us has expanded with so many people invested in our daughter that she's become almost like a poster child for somebody whose case has been corruptly investigated.
Now, the question I wanted to ask you, because when Caristo does contact you with this information and she bypasses all of the, because what was interesting about the book is that you went and took money from the book sales of I Know What You Did Last Summer, which, you know, you said, well, I wasn't so happy with that, but I took the money and we used it to give to a donation, and then to basically hire a tip line to gather tips. And then when you say, okay, can we have those tips, they go, no, we can only give these to police. And you figure, well, there'll at least be a couple tips out of those. And then this woman, Caristo, bypassed that after, I think, Sally Jesse Raphael, and said, listen, did you know this? Now, I wanted to ask you this, though. Doesn't this sort of complicate the Vietnamese? I mean, I was with you all the way with, oh, okay, this makes logical sense, the boyfriend, and especially the statement he said to the her hairdresser friend that, you know, they've shot Kate, you know. So doesn't this really complicate the case, this Abacando guy, this standing next to the vehicle? It gives credence to what you're saying, that the police didn't...
Everything has complicated the case, because the more information we get, the bigger the case becomes. And it's no longer just the boyfriend and his little group that was involved in things. The more we find out, the more we're finding about other criminal activities that link to this, including they were some of them. I don't know. Yeah, it was the boyfriend didn't mention this to Kate, I think, but stealing microchips from places like Intel, where some of them had jobs, and smuggling them and selling them, and then importation of drugs from Asia. And we're beginning to get into all kinds of criminal activities that we never suspected when I wrote the first book, because we got more and more information, made it more and more complicated, because no longer did I think, well, it's just a simple shooting because the boyfriend was mad at her. Now I have to think there's something really huge going on, that this boyfriend and his little group were on the fringe of and knew about and were participating in some fringe level. But whatever that level was, it was enough so that if people had followed up on it, it would have opened a huge can of worms that would have reflected on all the people that were protecting these various criminal activities. This was the tip of the iceberg, what I stumbled on when I wrote that first book. Well, I thought, oh, how smart I am, I've discovered it all. And then we've discovered now how much more there was to it. And if you read One to the Wolves, you will see where I'm heading with this, but I
don't
really want to get into the whole thing here, but I think anyone who reads that can put the pieces together and form their decision about who was the bottom line person involved in covering up all these activities.
The thing is, what we skipped over is, and again, this must have made your heart skip a beat at least, when initially happened, isn't this, you write in a book that about 6 months after Kate's murder, there was arrest of three young men and subsequent confessions. When that happened, tell us what your thoughts were at that time.
About 6 months after the shooting, just when we were starting to really rile up and force the police to look at the things like the phone calls out of Kate's place, all of a sudden they arrested three young Hispanic men for randomly shooting Kate. And turned out their eyewitness had been in prison at the time of the shooting. So their arrests fell through because there was no evidence against these Hispanic men. They were little creeps who'd been in trouble with the law, but there was nothing to tie them to Kate's case once the eyewitness, who was a 15-year-old, who later told the media that he was bullied into saying that these bullied by police into saying that these guys had done it, was discovered to have been in the detention center at the time of the shooting. He couldn't have been an eyewitness. And the charges were dropped against the Hispanic man. And yet, because they'd been arrested, all the police have to do is make an arrest to say that a case is closed. There doesn't have to be a trial, a conviction, anything. All there has to be is an arrest. They could go out and arrest anybody on the street corner and then say, well, we've made our arrest, so we've done our job. And if the case hasn't, if they weren't found guilty, that's up to the prosecutor. They didn't do their job right. And so where the case stands now is it's open. If you ask the police, it's open, which means that since it's open, no other agency can investigate it. And yet it's inactive, which means the police don't have to investigate it. So there, you're stuck in this bind where nobody else can investigate it because it belongs to the Albuquerque Police Department. They own Kate's case, and yet they're not going to investigate any further because they've closed it because they made their arrest. And they jump back and forth between saying it's open case and a closed case, depending upon who wants to look at it. And for the average person like us, trying to get information, trying to get another agency involved helping us, FBI wanted to become involved. But since murder is not a federal crime, they can only become involved if the investigating police department invites them in, which they refuse to do.
Well, is it such a wild thought, though, that because you've made them, from the very first appearance on Good Morning America, where you seem to have not, you know, you said, geez, this was a horrible, embarrassing, disastrous interview here, because they had interviewed the Albuquerque, New Mexico police, and they had, and it basically just got you to respond to, it was sort of a one-sided interview in terms of how they sort of, the angle of the interview itself, and then you were sort of defended against the allegation that you were a grieving mother who didn't know any better and just blamed the police for, because you had to blame somebody. But it did resonate with a lot of people. Is it such a wild thought to think that the police, despite having to do their job, having to do the right thing, that they were very, very angered, embarrassed, and humiliated by your actions and thought that you were out of your league or went beyond your rights to be able to try to investigate this murder of your own daughter?
Oh, I'm sure that's true. However, I did not write the book, and I did not give any interviews until after the police said that they were done with the case. At that point, I was not getting in the way of any investigation, and so there was no reason not to take a next step. And the only reason I was able to get this book published, that first book, was because I had built up a background as Lois Duncan, a writer of suspense novels. And by now I've written 50 books, and I had built a reputation, and I had a readership. And so I was able to write and have published a book that had no ending. And most people don't have a way to do that. And so I was very fortunate in being that position I was in. Not that anyone's fortunate in losing their child, but I was fortunate in having the ability and the access to getting a book published by a traditional publisher and promoted. And so, yes, the police, of course, got more and more and more angry the more attention this case got. The more shows I appeared on, the angrier they became, and that's, of course, a very reasonable thing. And I think the good cops really got brainwashed by the others to the point where they believed it too. Today's young generation of police officers, if you would talk to them, they would say, well, this case got solved. And this mother just wrecked their case by writing a book. They don't even know themselves that the book wasn't published until after the police was done with the case. Yeah, they're not the bad guys. I think whoever was there at the time was controlling the case was being controlled by somebody else, and that all the officers since simply believe the party line. So I'm definitely not saying the whole department's rotten, but whatever happened at some point poisoned the case and made it impossible for the other officers to do anything other than just say, well, it's a cold case, let's forget it. But it's not cold to us.
Now, what was interesting, too, is the behavior of Kate's boyfriend, Noon. We talked about his reaction. Again, him calling his friends, numerous friends, previous to the police, so apparently waking him up from a deep sleep to tell him about, to inform him of Kate's murder. Despite that, there's some other behavior that you've uncovered that is very, very odd and is not in sync with somebody grieving a girlfriend's murder. Tell us some of Noon's behavior, especially preceding or just after the murder.
Well, he came to the funeral. I think he was sincerely grieving. I do not believe he killed Kate, and I do not believe he wanted Kate to be killed. I think he told people too much. He was mad at her, and he told people that she was a bitch and she was going to blow the whistle on this stuff, and that he, by doing that, he set the wheels in motion that caused Kate to be chased down and shot to death. And either he was at the scene at the time of the shooting, or one of his friends was who called him and told him about it, because how else would he have known about it?
Right.
So, but I have never thought that he did it. They did a primer residue test on his hands. He had not fired a gun. I do not think he did it. He came to the funeral. I think he was sincerely grieving. He came to our home after the funeral when we had the wake, the people who would come to the home and eat and commiserate and so forth. And then he went to the apartment of a friend, and he had a Vietnamese friend, and he ended up with a knife in his belly that night. And the police said it was a suicide attempt. Yoon himself later said it was a suicide attempt. I went to the hospital to talk to him. He survived. I went to the hospital to ask him about how he was. At that point, I had no problem with him. I didn't suspect him. I was worried about him, sincerely. And he put his arms around my neck and said, "Mom, thank you for coming." And he said, "I didn't kill her." And I said, I know you didn't kill her." And then I paused, and then I said, "But you know who did." And I said, "You have to decide if you love her enough to tell." And he paused, and then he said, "I know, I am deciding."
Yeah, well.
Now, that, to me, says he has the knowledge, but is afraid, and I think someone else probably intimidated him by sticking a knife in his belly. There were about six people linked to Kate's case who ended up stabbed or slashed right after the murder. I think that was attempts to intimidate witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And
certainly
that's an awful
like
lot
it.
Of people to have accidents happen.
Yeah. Well, you've laid out a great case because, I mean, this is where the evidence does direct itself to. I mean, I can agree with you. I mean, lots of times, the only thing is that the guy that was hanging around the car, again, of course, police should have questioned him, but it really doesn't make any sense for this to be a carjacking because of the way she was shot in the head. That's an assassination of... I'm not an expert, but I have recently discovered apparently that sometimes they will shoot a person in the top of the head so that the bullet fragments break up in the head, since that part of the body is probably the hardest part of the body. I'm not an expert, but when I look at your case, it does look like an assassination. There's no way
it doesn't
it's a random
look
shooting.
Like an assassination.
Pardon me?
You said it doesn't look like an assassination.
No, it does. No, it
yeah,
does.
It does. It does.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Also, it was not a drive-by shooting. There was damage to the back of Kate's car. Rear-end damage, like her car had been hit from behind, forced off the road, using the pit technique, which is when you clip the corner, back left corner of a vehicle, and it makes it turn to the left and swerve and run across.
Mm-hmm.
That damage was not there prior to that night. And that suggests strongly that she was knocked off the road, and then someone on foot came up and shot her through the window. Everybody said it was a close shooting, a close-up shooting. It does not sound like something you could do from two cars racing along the road and you take some wild shots. And so it sounds like it was carefully orchestrated. And, well, we're doing the best we can to keep it going, to keep finding things out. Every time we do a show like this, every time people contact us, there are people who have information who maybe they didn't know that information was important at the time. Little things like how would her hairdresser know it was important what time the boyfriend called and told her about the shooting? How would she know? How would most people know that something was important unless they could see it in context with the whole picture? And that's what I hope the book, One to the Wolves on the Trail of a Killer, will do, that people who read it will put pieces into context and say, wait a minute, I know something. I heard somebody talking in a bar who said such and such, and that would fill in this little piece of the jigsaw puzzle that's missing. People hear things during pillow talk. We've gotten some of our best information from wives, estranged wives and girlfriends of cops involved in the cover-up, who told them things during pillow talk. And these wives and girlfriends are now angry, and they've contacted us and told us things, and we never accept any information as valid unless our private investigator follows up on it and can verify it, because too many people come up with too much guff. But in this case, a lot of these wives and girlfriends were right on the button. People, especially as time goes by, people talk. They talk too much. If they have a few drinks, they talk too much.
Certainly,
and so we hear it, and we learn it through our website. My email address is all over the internet. It's my real email address, Lois Duncan, and I have it there so that people can contact me, and I read everything that comes in, even if they're death threats, I read them. And people, we have a website for Kate with a message board. People can post anonymously on that.
What is the website?
It's Kate Arquette at arquettes.com.
Okay.
Kate is spelled K-A-I-T, and Arquette is A-R-Q-U-E-T-T-E.
Great.
And we're looking always for new information, but we also would like people to know about the book and to spread the word to others about it, because it's come out as an e-book first, and you can't get an e-book reviewed very well, very easily. And the only way people know about it is through word of mouth. So it's certainly available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any place for Nooks and Kindles or anything you can download. We're hoping that later it'll come out as a hard copy, but for right now, it's an e-book.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that, and we have another guest on, Donna Kaufman is on in a couple weeks with Cyril Wecht. And again, another part of the Planet Ann Rule. Tell us your involvement with Planet Ann Rule. And again, this is, again, she's been called the queen of true crime. And anybody that knows anything, has read any true crime book at all, has to have read a Ann Rule book. And everybody, beloved true crime writer, started her career with talking, and her first subject was Ted Bundy. But tell us about the Planet Ann Rule, and because this is a major endorsement of this importance of this book, and also the how great a read it is. It really is a great book. It's you can't put this thing down, and of course the credibility of Ann Rule. She's not going to put her name and her review to anything that isn't of the really the best quality. So tell us about your involvement with Planet Ann Rule.
Well, Dan, this you don't know about this, but to start with, Ann Rule and I were both young divorced mothers with children, and I had started my career, and she had not started hers as a writer. She was a police officer, I think, at the time, but she wanted to be a writer. She was raising her children by herself. I was raising mine by myself, but I had started making a career as a writer, and I gave a talk at a writer's conference, and Ann Rule sat in the back of the room, and she thought, if that woman can do it, I can do it. Well, some years later, I was on the panel of another writer's conference or librarian's conference or something, and the person, we were all being introduced in order, the person introduced ahead of me was Ann Rule, who had, and they said when she's just received a $2 million advance on her next book or something like that. I thought, oh, my God, I've got to follow that. What kind of act do I have to follow? How can I possibly? But so they said, here's Lois Duncan, who writes the teenage suspense novels. And Ann Rule jumped up and ran across the stage, threw her arms around me and said, Lois Duncan, my mentor. Well, I just melted. That was the beginning of a friendship. And from then on, of course, we followed each other, and we've met fairly as frequently as we could, considering we live in different sides of the country. Our children became friends, and Anne got better and better known and became so wonderful. And when I wrote this book, Ann Rule had just started her own ebook publishing company, Planet Ann Rule. And she said normally they're just publishing her own books as electronic books. But
right.
In this case, she wanted to publish one to the wolves. She felt so strongly. She was so emotionally invested in Kate's case right from the beginning that she wanted to be the one to publish it. And she wrote a wonderful endorsement for it. And so mine is the first book other than Ann Rule's own books that Planet Ann Rule has published. And they haven't yet started publishing hard copies, but they're getting ready to start doing that. They're a fledgling company, but I think they're taking off well. A company is being run by Leslie Rule, who is Anne's daughter.
Right.
And so,
also an author, yeah.
She's also an author, and I have endorsed some of her books, which are quite good. And so it's almost like an all-in-the-family thing. But Anne would never endorse a book she didn't believe in.
Yeah.
And she believes so totally in Kate's case that she's been our strongest supporter right from the beginning.
Yeah, well, that's really good. I know it's a major endorsement, and I know Ann Rule, that's the kind of writing she is known for as well, is really a victim's advocate. That's and that's her approach as well, you know, humanizing, of course. Well, not humanizing, bringing the reader into the victim's life, and, of course, their inevitable death, and to show people how everything works, how everything happened in that person's life, the unfortunate incidences. Sometimes there is little bits of sort of happy endings, somewhat. True crime isn't really known for that. And then there's the heart-wrenching, very, very heart-wrenching, like, your case, your personal involvement, and then the questions unanswered and the justice undone. So
I think the thing that makes my book probably different from the others that you review on your program is that it's written not by someone who's a recognized true crime writer about somebody else's case, but it's written by a mother about their own case, and it's written in first person. So there's a human element in it that I would never want to write a book about someone else's case. I wouldn't have the strength to do it. But
no.
I've had enough strength to handle writing about Kate's.
Yeah. No, well, on this program, we just talk about individual cases lots of times because there are certainly true crime writers that have 20 or 30 books, but there are certain books and certain cases that resonate with me, and that's why we've done cases of wrongful conviction, open cases where, you know, the journalist, the author, the police officer, people are still looking for answers and for the culprit. So, again, it's just, to me, it's fascinating, all of these aspects, the different types of books that are now categorized as true crime. And I'm glad that your book is considered true crime so that we've had this opportunity to share the story with an international audience. And just hopefully that there'll be an audience that listens in and has that, like you say, one little tidbit of information that adds when it's put into all the context of hearing all the other information. So I wish you the very, very best with that. And hopefully some federal authorities will maybe reopen this case, because you've certainly done your due diligence and done an incredible amount of evidence gathering. And it's very clear and coherent and sensible and reasonable. And the way you've done it is to exhaust all attempts to contact the police and give them the evidence and present the case and analysis of the case by private investigators that are credible. So I just hopefully somebody that has more authority will look at this case, because certainly there is a lot of evidence that you've presented, and it makes an incredible amount of sense to me. So I wish you the very, very best with this and congratulate you on this incredible effort.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, I want to say that it has been great interviewing this evening, and I want to tell everybody that's been listening to Lois Duncan. It's One to the Wolves, and it's available everywhere. And thank you very much, Lois, for this interview, and have yourself a good evening.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list: teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.